website, thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, again, I go back to last night's speech and this almost call for diplomacy from a guy who has, at every turn, turned away from diplomacy. And one of the things that popped into my head is, how are you going to reach out to the Pakistanis? How are you going to reach out to the Indians and even the Afghans in a meaningful way diplomatically when you're getting rid of all of your diplomats? I mean, it's bizarre to me. I mean, they're just, you're not going to send them a book or a bottle of wine and say, oh, please come along. I mean, it's ridiculous. I hope it works. You know, look, I don't want to be tied down another 16 years in Afghanistan, but you know, last night told me one thing. We're in it to win it, whatever winning means. And here to talk a little bit about this and whatever else we can bang around, I've got Andrea Chalupa to come talk with us. Andrea, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. I'm just here exhausted, tired by all this winning.
You know, the winning is overwhelming.
It is.
Here's the thing. I mean, he didn't lay out last night what winning actually is. I mean, he talked about it, called the people there, the Taliban and the ISIS and all of them, called them losers. But he didn't really define what winning is. And I wish someone could define that.
I mean, I guess according to some people in the media, winning is defined by the president being able to read off of a teleprompter.
That's a start.
So, yeah, you saw some depressing hot takes. I think it was Phil Rucker who got dragged by Twitter last night by saying, you know, this is the moment where the president, or Trump, let's just call him Trump, where Trump, you know, focused on history and put one sentence before the next and was in this moment born a president. Some really ridiculous seeming hot take like that. And I just had to start this interview with that because I think we need the media desperately to open their eyes and stop waiting for the moment Trump will become president. His cards are on the table. He is who he says he is, and it's time for us to all take that very seriously, given everything that's at stake.
Yeah, in fact, the tweet was, tonight is a new President Trump acknowledging a flip-flop and talking about gravity of office, history, and substance. And even I said, wait a second, you know, how many talking? I tweeted back. How many talking heads are going to play into the today Trump became presidential nonsense? Give me a break already! And look, please stop with this, please.
Exactly. I mean, it's like we have Netflix. We have so many great series right now. It's like we don't need journalists to try to like milk, you know, little, you know, excitement points and really sort of feed the beast of excitement. It's like we need people to hold power accountable and to speak truth to power. That is the only role, only job of a journalist. A journalist is not supposed to be
a
like
stenographer.
Some kid in the exactly right. It's not. We're not like in a high school cafeteria where everybody's like, you know, like chasing after the cool kids or the people that are popular, you know, or infamous. It's like it's not that. We all need to grow up and just focus on this extremely critical time that the entire world is in as democracy is on a decline and authoritarianism would be working out a pretty strong and impactful global alliance.
And that's the thing. I mean, when you have a president who has repulsed the global community, how are these, you know, and I've been saying, you know, as much as I don't like Rex Tillerson, he's probably got the toughest job of anybody because he's got to be the one making the phone calls after Trump has burnt the bridge.
Right. And you know, one thing with Rex Tillerson, it's horrible what he's allowed, you know, reportedly allowed Jared Kushner and this Trump administration to do to the State Department, just how empty and underfunded the State Department is, how even, you know, Congress, is the president's own party, Republicans or Congress, are saying, we are going to give you this money to fight Kremlin propaganda. We insist on it. We insist on giving you this money for our democracy initiative. And Rex Tillerson is telling Congress in the budget hearing, like, straight out, even if you give it to me, I'm not going to spend it. Like, he's deliberately, actively, openly, in front of all of our eyes, weakening the State Department. You know, we have so many diplomatic positions that are yet to be filled, including these critical areas where Trump wants to go to war. And all of it is just, you know, it just is very clear. The writing's on the wall. It all spells chaos. It all spells, you know, easily slipping into a World War III. It's an extremely dangerous situation that we're in. So the sooner Republicans can find their backbone and stand up to Trump and impeach him, the safer the entire world will be, and the safer American security will be.
Do you see that happening? I mean, honestly and truthfully, I mean, over the last week, I haven't seen the kind of outrage from Republicans that you would expect out of, you know, look, guy defended Nazis. And yet you haven't seen a mass exodus from his camp of people saying, no, you're dead flat wrong. I mean, they've been trying to, you know, walk the line. But I thought Nazis, we could all agree, Nazis bad.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, when Republican leaders like Paul Ryan, when they tolerate and stand by Donald Trump, what they're basically telling the world is that they are fellow racists. You know, they may speak out and write tweets and condone the Nazi rally. They might condone the violence of the far right. But if they're sticking by the president, they're basically telling the world that they're racist themselves and they have no problem with his, you know, racist-driven agenda. And the fact that he still has actual Nazis like Seb Gorka in the White House.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this, and again, you know, I get tons of email from people going, "What, free speech? No, they're Nazis." I'm sorry.
Nazis don't get it. Exactly right. I mean, we had a whole entire world war that decided this. Like, you know, Nazis do not get to be in power. Nazis do not get our tax dollars. And in fact, the fact that they currently are shows that we've been asleep in terms of the rise of the Nazi threat. So, you know, we need to do a better job in keeping white supremacists, members of hate groups like the KKK. We need to make sure we keep these people, identify them, and keep them out of any positions of power, including in law enforcement, including in prisons. So all of this is, you know, opening up our eyes of how the resistance in America has been complicit itself by people just not being engaged enough and not being on the front lines enough. And so, you know, one silver lining that everyone likes to point out is that Trump has finally woken us up to the horrors we've just allowed to go on unchecked.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I'm often pining for the days of a stain on a blue dress.
Right. Or like the scandal of a tan suit.
Yeah. I mean, I got to be honest. It just seems like for the average everyday working person who has to get up every day and they're busting their behinds just to make ends meet and put food on the table and a roof over their head. This is just a tsunami of bad.
It's a tsunami of bad, and it's constant, and it's every day, and just the stuff that makes it to the front page of Twitter, you know, just that, those items that, you know, of outrage for the day, there's just so much beneath the surface that we're not even talking about, you know, what he's doing to the environment, what he's doing in pulling back, you know, regulations, what he's doing, like the horrors of education under Betsy DeVos. There's so many things that we're just not talking about because there's just, like you said, there's just so many things that he's like a house of horrors that he's turned the White House into.
Yeah, I mean, let me ask you this, because part of this, there's a bunch of the speech that didn't actually say anything, but that then said a lot. He said that fundamental pillars of our new strategy is the integration of all instruments of American power, diplomatic, economic, and military. And I got to be honest, I'm going, did we not already do this over 16 years? Haven't we already tried all of these things?
Yeah, I mean, and the Soviets tried, and that didn't work out for them either. So I think, you know, his position in Afghanistan, which is really bizarre that, you know, there's a couple things bizarre there, that, you know, suddenly on like the heels of Bannon's ouster, he suddenly calls this press conference as though, you know, he wants to deflect from the Nazis in the White House and how he's openly supported them. So he also wants to maybe deflect from Bannon leaving, what Bannon might do to hurt him coming out of Breitbart. So just the fact that he called this press conference on the night when he did was just very sort of, you know, very clear that it's a strategy of deflection. And the reason why you know that was suddenly the U.S. under Trump was going to war with North Korea. And then suddenly he threatened to invade Venezuela. And then now it's Afghanistan's turn and, you know, in Pakistan. So it's sort of like, what is this guy doing? And how soon can they get him out? I mean, it's just bizarre. It's like a toddler with nuclear weapons, like throwing a tantrum.
Yeah, I mean, next we'll be invading Grenada.
Right. And didn't he say, like, North Korea's nuclear threat against Guam is only helpful for tourism for Guam. So, I mean, if he threatens to invade Grenada, he's going to say, like, oh, that just helps your tourism industry or something like that. It's you know, I'm glad we have you, Rick, because it kind of helps to sort of talk about these things and not keep them all bottled up inside and just, yeah.
No, we need these moments of group sanity. We need to be able to get this stuff out. Because, look, you know, I watched the Talking Heads last night, and I watched Fox News, and I got to be honest, I'll be honest, because I have to know what the enemy is saying. And yet you saw Sean Hannity say, you know, this was the right speech at the right time, the right tone, right pitch. You've got Newt Gingrich saying it was the most honest speech of foreign policy by a president in his lifetime. You've got, you know, all of these people just all of this praise and all of this, he's presidential, and all of this cheerleading. You go, wait a minute, did we watch the same thing?
It was a wag the dog speech. It was clearly, the strategy was put into place to, and they probably convinced him to do it this way. They said, look, you know, they won't shut up about the Nazis, you know, unless you give them a war, unless you come out and do something heroic and play military general. And the one thing that is pretty consistent about Trump is that he does respect the generals. That's right. Why he has so many around him. And so the generals must have convinced him, hey, you get to put on your big boy hat and play general with the speech. Isn't that fun? And that way they'll talk about how great you are instead of, you know, this Nazi fake news. That's exactly how they sold it to him, I'm sure. And that was the entire strategy behind this. What was really interesting, too, I want to point out is that He called the speech, you know, right with at the same time when Paul Ryan had his town hall. It's like the Republicans are so loyal to Trump, but Trump's not loyal at all to Republican leaders. You know, he insults Mitch McConnell openly. It's just ridiculous. I don't know when they're going to learn.
I got to be honest. It's one of the things I like about him.
Exactly. And another thing I want to point out, which is really funny, is Breitbart. Now that Bannon's back at Breitbart, you know, like barbarian Bannon, like he's promising war on Trump's enemies. But since he's been back at Breitbart, you know, so it's just funny the pieces that I've ran. For instance, one of my tweets got picked up on Breitbart, and they did a whole piece where they collected all these tweets of people who are like resistance voices, slamming the president, you know, shrugged response to the USS John McCain that, you know, had that horrible accident. And remember, what did he say? Something really stupid, like, oh, that's too bad.
Right.
It's like, you say that's too bad when, like, you know, your favorite, like, sandwich shop is out of pesto. I don't know. It's like, you say that's too bad when, you know, when you, like, when someone steals your cab. It's like, you don't say that's too bad when there's been like a serious accident on the seas with like a you know, a U.S. military vessel with the Navy. You just right. don't say that. It's not a commander-in-chief response. And so what's really interesting is Breitbart took all the tweets of these resistance voices slamming the president for a stupid response and framed it to blame McMaster for not having given the president the information needed at the time to make a smarter response. But the point is, anybody who's presidential would speak off the cuff with more consideration to the men and the women in our Navy. And this president simply doesn't have that instinct because he has a horrible, rotten character.
No one
can save him from himself. But what's interesting is that Bannon being back at Breitbart, Bannon's not going to go to war against Trump's opposition. Bannon is going to be going to war against Bannon's enemies, which are Jared and Ivanka and McMaster. And it's almost like this piece where my tweet got swept up in and other resistance people's tweets got swept up in. It's almost like this piece that Breitbart did was to say, like, look, Trump, they're all laughing at you, and it's McMaster's fault.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Bannon plays this out, because you're right. Bannon is about Bannon and his ideological movement, you know, whatever that may be. It's not about loyalty to the country. It's not about loyalty to Trump. It's about loyalty to himself and his rigid ideology.
Right. And he knows how to get through to Trump. I mean, he was President Bannon. People in a lot of their sort of, you know, breakdowns since he's left are saying, oh, he complained about just being a staffer. He wasn't as, you know, he was sort of, you know, jockeying for his own influence in the White House. He wasn't as presidential. He wasn't President Bannon, that we all think. But that's wrong. I mean, a lot of the president's agenda that flowed out of that Fire Hose of Chaos, and like the Muslim ban, to just all the horrendous things he did and said, of just sort of breaking down the system, that had Bannon's DNA all over it. You know, Jared and Ivanka were begging him to, you know, give independents a chance, give moderate Republicans and Democrats a chance, so there was a way that they could appeal to him. And Bannon said, no way, that's not your base. Be true and loyal to your base. And that's what Trump did by sticking by the Nazis. So he followed Bannon. So Bannon knows how to get into Trump's head. So I think people like you and I are going to be safe in terms, you know, people in the opposition, Trump's enemies that Bannon claims he's going to go to war with. I think we're relatively safe compared to Bannon's own enemies that he wants to really destroy to get through to Trump and continue to manipulate Trump from the pages of Breitbart.
It's going to be interesting to watch how this plays out. Last question I've got for you tonight, the big rally in Phoenix. One, what are you expecting to come out of it? And two, does he pardon Joe Arpaio?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, he's a showman. It's a reality show, right? He's going to bring Joe Arpaio on stage and give him a rose. I mean, that's how this guy operates. That's what got him into power. And the media is going to fall for it. So a couple predictions. Number one, get ready to see some, you know, so-called respected voices in the media, the Phil Rucker types. Expect to see one or two of them say something completely stupid on Twitter to sort of ignore the last couple decades of Trump, who Trump is. They're going to write some sort of, like, band-aid tweet saying, all is forgiven, he's presidential now, or this is a smart move. Or that was a smart strategy. You know, they're going to say something dumb like that because I don't know why they do it. It's bizarre. If you can't do your job as a journalist, step aside and let someone else do it. So expect like a tweet or two like that. It's going to outrage everyone with common sense. Number two, you know, he is going to, you know, I'm sure speak lovingly of Arpaio. There might be a rose that comes out in the form of a pardon. Who knows? But he will do that. He will stand by his man because that's how Bannon programmed him. And so number three, you're going to have a wonderful counter protest to show, you know, the face of the real America. That's the America that's finally woken up. And it's the America that's always century after century moved us forward at critical times like this. It's the America that, you know, fought for abolishing slavery, fought for civil rights. That America that's going to show up tonight in Phoenix, along with all these white supremacists. And so, you know, so it's going to be a really interesting and important night, and it speaks a lot to Trump's character and Ivanka's total lack of control of him that this Phoenix rally is even allowed to continue, given the loss of life he just had at that Nazi rally.
Yeah, I mean, again, I come back to, the people who are going to be out there, the counter protesters, they're the real heroes. It's supposed to be well over 100 degrees, and to be standing out on the streets and to voice your thoughts. I got to be honest, and I got to wonder if the rose that you predict that Trump will give to Arpaio, I wonder if it'll be pink.
Just right,
match the underwear. You go, Andrea. I appreciate you taking some time for us.
Thank you so much, Rick. Anytime. Appreciate it.
Always great talking with you. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. There's order in the house. There's a flaw in the system.